Today's lecture is called Clustering of Correlations. So today we prove a theorem that says if we have a unique ground state and the gap above the ground state, then all correlation functions decay exponentially, or in other words, there is a finite correlation length. So this fact has been known for a very long time, at the very least since people found an exact solution of the Ising model and were able to compute correlation functions. They saw that they decay exponentially in the paramagnetic phase, where indeed we have a unique ground state and a gap above it. And then there are many arguments about quantum field theory, sometimes some exactly solvable models in which you see the same thing. But we didn't have a theorem until 2006. When Matthew Hastings proved it. Well, you know, in mathematical physics, there are things that are very difficult sometimes to prove, although they are very well known in theoretical physics, and they're called Fock theorems. So this situation happens all the time, and this is not a course of mathematical physics. It's not like we always need to see the things, you know, in the most mathematical precise way. So why we are doing that? So for two reasons. The first reason is that this proof is very instructive from the technical point of view. Okay, so again, because one of the goals of this course is not only to give you modern concepts of quantum many-body physics, but also to give you tools that are the tools that people are using in research. So we will see many of these things. Second reason is that the detail of the proof in this case contains an idea that allows us to go beyond symmetry breaking orders. Okay. The reason is this. As you can see, unique ground state here means it's a disordered phase, right? Because when we have a degeneracy, the degenerate ground state, a degeneracy, then you have a local order parameter that shows magnetization, then you have a long range order in the correlation functions. Remember that. Okay. So you see that the way the theorem works is that if you have a gap and the ground state is unique, then you have finite correlation length. And we will see that it is not also this way. We will see exactly in detail why, in principle, it would be possible for a non-unique ground state to still have finite correlation length. But this will not be symmetry breaking. We will see it exactly in the proof. Where the uniqueness, under which conditions plays this role. Okay? So if we can go beyond that paradigm, we will find that there is another kind of order that is possible that we start understanding from tomorrow. Okay, so these are the two motivations for me to show this theorem. One is learn technical tools to to understand that there is, you know, another kind of order that is possible. Okay. Now, on this blackboard, I will put a bunch of mathematical facts that we need in order to do this proof. And then I will pull it up so that we can look at it at any moment. Okay, so first thing, the first thing that we need to use, one, are the Lieb-Robinson bounds. And I will, okay, let me write it in this way. So we know it's a bound on the norm of the commutator that be, must be smaller than some constant, 2ab. And then we have a light cone. However, if you follow the proof of yesterday until up until almost the end, then you you can realize that the same bound can also be obtained in this form. It's just in this form is less instructive because the light cone is not so obvious, but with a couple of lines of calculation, so do it as a homework, you can put the bound in this way. And the reason why I put in this way is because in this form it will be useful for what we're going to do. Okay, so this is the first thing. Then I want to recall a few facts about Fourier transform that will be our main tool for today. So the Fourier transform of a function f which I also will call capital F of t. I will define it. So I will use this one form. And the anti-Fourier transform will be the one with the 1 over 2 pi. So I can do that instead of having 1 with 1 over square root of 2 pi, both of them. So let me use this form of f hat omega e to the I omega t d omega. OK. So this is the definitions that we'll be using. When two functions are related by Fourier transform, we will also use this notation. Okay. We define the convolution between two functions as this sort of inner product. This is x. And something you should be familiar with is the fact that the Fourier transform turns convolutions into products and vice versa. In other words, the Fourier transform of f convolution g is equal to the product of the two Fourier transforms. And that the Fourier transform of the product is the convolution with 1 over 2 pi of the two Fourier transforms. OK. More stuff. There are two Fourier transforms. So let me call it fact one that we're going to use. One is the Fourier transform of this function that we call a Gaussian envelope. It's a Gaussian. that is related by Fourier transform to this other function that is also a Gaussian function. And another pair that the Heaviside step function is the Fourier transform of pi delta of t minus I of t, which we will call theta hat of t. So this is the step function, and theta hat is the Todor monster there with the delta. And now, so I will write it, then I pull it up. I know it's not easy to see right now. I will write two lemmas. So lemma one is the following, that, okay, so this integral between minus infinity and plus infinity of a theta hat minus t e to the minus e t e to the minus alpha t squared dt is equal to two alpha over delta e to the minus delta square over four alpha. Actually, no, it's not, sorry, it's not equal, it's smaller than this quantity. When this number e here is larger than this number here, delta. Whereas when it is smaller or equal, this is order of just e to the minus delta square over 4 alpha. Okay. Now let me write now lemma 2 and then I comment on these things. Lemma 2, the integral between minus a and a of e to the x minus 1 over x dx is order epsilon to the a. Okay. So the two lemmas, the proof of these two lemmas is straightforward. You just need to work on it a little bit. It is left as homework. However, it is completely worked out in the lecture notes. So you try to do it, and then you check with the lecture notes. There are all the passages, okay? But it's a bit of algebra that it's not worth your attention right now. So take them as facts. They are proven there, okay? The Fourier transforms over there, you know, you can either check on any calculus book that those are the Fourier transforms of those functions. Okay. Very well. So equipped with this knowledge, let's try to understand what is that we want to do. Okay. What we want to do is to compute the connected correlation functions in the ground state between two operators, but without loss of generality, we can consider the case in which the expectation value of A in the ground state is equal to the expectation value of B in the ground state and it is zero, because in case this is not so, we can define another operator that is equal A minus this, and then it's the same thing. Then its expectation value will be zero. Okay, so there is no loss of generality. So connected or not connected for us will be the same. But this assumption simplifies the proof, and actually there is no loss of generality. Okay? So these are the objects that we are interested in, and we want to say that this object decays exponentially with the distance between A and B over a finite length psi. Okay, so this is our object of interest. And we will use as a main tool for this the Lieb-Robinson bounds. Now, one says, okay, what's the relationship between that commutator and these correlation functions? Okay, let's see. So let's compute the expectation value of that commutator in the ground state. Okay. Now, it is a very straightforward thing. And again, do it as a homework. But this is very straightforward. If you write A and B in the basis of the Hamiltonian, you see the Hamiltonian appears because this is A of t. Right? A of t is e to the I h t A e to the I e to the minus I h t. Then this is equal to the sum over all the states above the ground state. And then you have these two parts. And why we are above the ground state? Because the matrix element A00 and the matrix element B00 that should be there are zero because of our initial assumption. We call this part positive frequency, right? Because we have a positive energy. And this other part is negative frequency. And our object of interest is this one. So now that you see it in this form, do you see what is the relationship between this object and this? How could I get this object from here? Help me. Tell me. If I write this in a basis, by the same token, this is nothing else but, you agree? Again, A00 and B00 are zero. So how do I get this object from here?
Fourier transform
will play a role, but my question is easier. First of all, we should ditch the negative frequency, keep only the positive frequencies, right? Because they contain this part. And then we send it to zero. Okay? So we have to filter out the negative frequencies and then send t to zero. Now, let's look at that blackboard. What is the filter for the negative frequencies? It's theta of omega. See, it's the step function. It's zero when omega frequency is negative. So what I said in words, in formula becomes, so let me pull this up. If I had to compute just this, Okay, so what is that I have to do? I first take my commutator, the expectation value of it, which is the whole thing, right? Now, to filter the frequencies, I have to write it in the frequency domain. So I have to take the Fourier transform. Okay? Then I filter out the negative frequencies. Then I go back to my original variables, that is time domain. And then finally, I send the t to 0. Okay. So if you do that, you just extract the sum over I of a0i bi0, which is this object. So far, so good? OK, so you see, we are learning a technique, how to filter out some kind of frequency from an object, from a correlation function. Good. OK, so now let's compute this. OK. So you see, this is the Fourier or anti-Fourier transform of a product, which means it will be the convolution of the two Fourier transforms. So I have to so this will be 1 over 2 pi, because it is the anti-Fourier transform. And now what is the anti-Fourier transform of theta of omega? Is what we called theta hat t. So that monster with the delta there. OK, so this is theta hat t convoluted, okay, with the anti-Fourier transform of the Fourier transform, so with just the commutator. And then finally, oh, now you see now this object is back to the time domain, but it has lost the negative frequencies, and now I send t to 0. OK, so far, so good. Now, let's apply our formula for the convolution. So let me just write it. Because you see, we have a star here. It's the convolution. So this is some integral. So we have 1 over 2 pi, the integral between minus infinity and infinity of 0 ATB 0. And so this t is this variable on which I'm summing. So here, this variable, let me call it t prime, and I'm integrating in t prime. Whereas this other object will be, this t is like x. So this becomes t minus t prime. Okay, theta hat t minus t prime. And everything then at t equals 0. OK, then at t equals 0, it's very easy, right? You just send t equals 0. And then t prime is just a dummy index. It's a summation index, so I can relabel it t again. So this is just equal to 1 over 2 pi. It's almost the same thing, only as you can see, in here, we have a minus t. OK, yes. A of t, b, expectation value 0. And now we have the theta hat of minus t in dt. OK. So this is actually our object. OK. Now, we would like to say that this object is small when the two operators A and B are far away. Right? This is our tool. We have no idea yet how to proceed, because we don't know yet how to use our facts that the ground state is unique, that there is a gap. But this is the object that has to be small. And the first thing that you see is that there are conditions under which this is small, right? It's the Lieber-Robinson bounds. So, because this is upper bounded by its norm. Now, what is the problem here? When is the Lieber-Robinson bound makes a commutator very small? So, I need you to tell me before I go ahead. So Lieber-Robinson bound is an upper bound. It means it's smaller than some quantity, but under which conditions this quantity is small?
T is small compared to the speed and the distance between them.
When T is you have to speak louder because I'm deaf.
When T is small.
When T is small compared to some distance and to some velocity. So there is some domain of the variable t, for t in a certain interval, this quantity will be very small. However, this object is as t in a domain, unfortunately, because of our Fourier transform over every t. So it's not always small. Okay? So one thing that we could do is to make an error. Okay, we don't really compute that. So we make some error. And we add here a Gaussian envelope. Okay, we envelope into a Gaussian. Because now you see when alpha is very large, for alpha large, this kills the large t. So this object would be small for small t because of the Lieber-Robinson bounds, but then it would be small for large t because of the Gaussian envelope. So for alpha large, this works. And now the question is this. So this is our problem. If alpha is large, is it true that we don't make a big mistake? So how do we argue about that? So what does it mean to compute this instead that with this theta hat, with this thing? Remember, this was the filter. And we have replaced the filter. This is the filter in time domain. But in frequency domain, it was a filter. So having changed this object into this object has some consequence on the filter. So this means that when we do this, we don't really filter out all the negative frequencies, right? We have an imperfect filter. So we need to evaluate how bad this is, how much of the filter is not perfect. So let's do that. And let me put it here in this box. Okay. So what is the Fourier transform of theta hat t e to the minus alpha t squared? I know here I have minus t, but this thing doesn't change for t and minus t. It's the same thing. Well, this will be equal to the convolution of the two Fourier transforms, right? So we would have 1 over 2 pi theta omega convoluted with pi over alpha e to the minus omega squared over 4 alpha. because the Fourier transform of this is this function, as I wrote up there in fact one. So if you remember how the convolution works, this just means that this is integrating this together with this in omega minus omega prime. And this is a Gaussian. So when is that, in which limit, this convolution gives me back theta omega?
Alpha zero.
When this is very narrow, when this is the delta of Dirac. Which is basically, it just picks the summation index omega prime being zero. So you go back to this. So when this is very narrow, then this is a very good approximation. Right? So basically, I have a step function. But because of this Gaussian envelope, this thing has been smoothed out. And it is still a very good filter if my smoothing out is obtained with a very steep Gaussian. Then I don't make a big error. So, and when is that the Gaussian approximates the delta? When this number is very large, right? Now you see that this number is very large when alpha is very small. You see we have some trouble because this works. You know, I kill off the large time when alpha is large. So you see the situation is not simple enough. It's not simple at all because on the one hand, we want alpha very large to kill a large t. But if alpha is very large, we have a very crappy filter. So that's why this everything is complicated. Or that it would be so nice if they went in the same direction. We just pick large alpha, we're done. So the question is it possible that we have a sweet spot, some intermediate alpha, such that I get a fast enough exponential decay in the Gaussian tail and a fast enough exponential decay in the Gaussian tail here for large t and still a good filter. So alpha is not too large so that I don't make a large error. So this is our goal. To show that in this trade-off, there are some, you know, it's not desperate. There is some value of alpha that is okay. Okay, so let's try. So now the proof will proceed like this. I will write. My desired object, my correlation function, in this way. So I first will do something very silly. So this will be equal to itself plus something minus the same something. OK. So this is very true. And what is this something? This something is this object. So let me, maybe I can just name it. So this object is defined as imperfect filter. Okay, IF minus IF. Okay, so this is a triviality, but now let's look at this. So now we have two terms. One term is small because of the Lieb-Robinson bounds plus Gauss-Chanteil. Because it is this guy, right? It is IF. I have already argued that this can be small. This can be made small by Lieb-Robinson bounds plus Gauss-Chanteil. Okay? And now we have this thing that I could call it delta, is the error on the filter. So now we will try to bound these two objects separately. So we will have some conditions on some parameters, including alpha, right? Alpha is so far the parameter that we have. And we will try to see if these two final conditions for these two things to be small can be satisfied both at the same time by alpha and the whatever other parameter will enter here. Okay? So now we will set out to show that this is small and this is small. Okay, so let's do that. Okay, so now I want to show there is a very ugly shadow. Okay, so now I want to show. So part one, IF is small. So what is that we are doing? We want to show that this integral between minus infinity and plus infinity is small. So one thing that definitely we can do is to divide this integration in two domains, the domains for small t and the domain for large t. So we'll have that t is smaller than something plus t in absolute value is larger than something, okay? So this will cover the integration between minus infinity and this something and that minus the something and outside that interval and when t is larger. And the same here. So what do you think this something is? What parameter should enter there? Here's where we want to use our Lieb-Robinson bounds, right? So this should be smaller than what? This should be smaller than the distance times a velocity, right? Times a velocity. Oh, yes. Okay. Over a velocity. We don't know yet if the Lieb-Robinson speed is actually the velocity that will help us, right? Because we don't know if we don't know yet, but V is one of these parameters. So let me call whatever this inverse of the velocity is, let me call it C. So C somehow will depend on V. Okay, at the end we will have equations where all these things are incorporated. So this somehow contains V. And this is the distance. And now we have greater than CD. OK, so you see that we have to show that this is small and this is small. OK, so let's do that. Let's first show that the T minus CD part. So we have the absolute value of 1 over 2 pi integral on t smaller than cd of the expectation value of A of t, comma b, 0, my theta hat minus t, e to the minus alpha t square, dt. So we want to show that this is small. So smaller than something. Okay, so let's use our bound. This will be smaller than 1 half, the integral on the same domain. Okay, what is this object? It is, in absolute value, delta t plus 1 over pi t. So look at theta hat. Theta hat of minus t in absolute value is that. And then we have, in the upper bound, we have the norm of this, which is 2ab. No, sorry. No, I don't want to do that. It is atb, the norm of atb, yeah, in dt. Okay, now let's use the Lib Robinson bounds. So this is smaller or equal of 2ab. The 2 is killed by this one, so I have ab. Then I have the integral t smaller than cd. And now I have to use the Lib Robinson bound in that form. Okay, that's where I got 2ab. And now I have to insert that formula. So let me do that. So I will have, okay, let me write everything and then you will see. And all this is integrated in dt. Okay, so we have two terms because I multiply that function by these two guys. Okay, so we have these two terms. Okay. Okay, now we see that this term is very simple because there is a delta here. So this delta sends this to zero. And pretty much this is the reason why I wanted my Lib Robinson bound to be written in that way where we have a e to the mu vt minus 1. Because I mean Matthew Hastings knew that there would be a delta here that would do this trick. Okay, so this goes away. And we are left with that part. Okay, and now this is equal to AB. Now notice that this integral, first of all, this is a constant for this integral. Okay? That this integral, e to the minus a constant t minus 1 over t, is of the form of the integral of lemma 2. No, sorry, of, yes, of lemma 2. So if I apply that, I will have order of e to the minus 1 minus vc mu d. Yes. Okay. So this is our first bound. you see that the Lee-Robinson part does decay exponentially with D. Now we have to see, okay, I'll try to make it fit in this box. The other part, when T is larger than CD, right? Now we have to show that this integral is small because of the Gaussian tail. Okay, so we have the same object that is in here, only integrated on T greater than CD. Greater than CD. It's the same object that is here. Okay, so this will be smaller of the absolute value. Okay, so 1 over 2 pi. Then I have the integral T greater than CD. So now I have this object. Again, I can take its norm. But now I am at large T. I know that the Lee-Robinson bounds is not helping me there. So here, I bound it in the trivial way, which is not a good bound. But it's OK. 2ab. You see? The Lee-Robinson bound is not helping me here in the commutator. However, we have e to the minus alpha t square dt. And now, this is for this integral. We consider lemma 1 for e greater than some number that is actually alpha. So using lemma 1 on this integral, the integral of the Gaussian thing, we get this, that this is equal to AB order of. So we would have, so let me write it all, 1 over 2 pi c d alpha e to the minus alpha c squared d squared, which in terms of these parameters is this constant a b and then order of just e to the minus alpha c squared d squared. Okay, so I'm using lemma 1, the first line. Is alpha greater than these numbers, CDA? I can choose alpha as I want. Okay. So we have a bound IF, OK? So IF is smaller than the sum of this term plus this term. Now we have to understand how large is delta F, the error that we made, because we use this imperfect filter that helped us to kill the large T. OK, so let's do that. So this is delta F, let me write it, is the 1 over 2 pi, the integral between minus infinity and infinity. Oh, no, actually, let me write this. Not delta F, let me write this. Let me write directly this object. Theta hat minus t, e to the minus alpha t squared dt. OK, what is this equal to? This is equal to the sum over I greater than 1, AI0, BI0, 1 over 2 pi, integral between minus infinity and plus infinity, my positive frequencies so this is the part in positive frequency minus the other part B0i A0 1 over 2 pi Okay. So now let us use our hypothesis. Okay? Let us use the hypothesis that first of all our ground state is unique. If our ground state is unique, and so we have no degeneracy, this means that this index 0 here does not have another index alpha that counts the degeneracy. If I had the degeneracy, then in these correlation functions, I would have another sum over alpha. And what this would mean is that some parts will go to 0, but then I would still have a part of order 1. It is exactly that part that comes from the fact that you superimpose all psi 0, all spins up and all spins down. And these objects see it. They connect the two parts. So we're not doing that, okay? Because the ground state is unique. But keep this remark in mind because we will comment on this at the end. Yeah?
Can you say again where does the term of order 1 come from if you're summing over the degeneracies?
If so there is a bit of algebra to do, but if you have another index, the time domain part will have some cancellation, so you will be left with just the contributions that are of this guy and this guy in the ground state, and this will give you something of order one. There is a bit of algebra to do. Now let's use that we have a gap, okay? So this means that all these energies are greater than a given delta, which means that we can use this integral here. And all these energies, you see, that's I write it like minus I minus EI, are smaller, so I will use this other one. Okay, so I will just plug these two integrals in here. So all this will be equal to the sum I greater than 1, A0i, Bi0, 1 plus omega order of e to the minus delta square over 4 alpha. And the second part, the negative frequency 1, order of just e to the minus delta square over 4 alpha. Okay. But notice that this guy, when multiplies 1, is our correlation function. Right? So you see that this object minus this object is exactly what we want to bound. It is our delta F. So delta F is smaller than this guy, that is my correlation functions. Times something disorder, plus again, this other correlation function times something that has the same order, because it is disorder. And the correlation functions are just upper bounded by A and B. So this is all upper bounded by AB times e to the minus delta square over 4a. In other words, both this guy and this guy are upper bounded by the norms of AB. The one went on the other side to give us delta F together with this, and then we are left with the same term that multiplies the same order of magnitude. Okay, so we are almost done. We really did most of the work now, because now we just need to put everything together. Because our initial object is this, right? It's our correlation function. That we wrote as IF plus delta F. And IF is upper bounded by this plus this. So this is an overall AB. And then I have order of e to the minus 1 minus vc mu d plus order of e to the minus alpha c squared d squared. Alpha, yes. C squared d squared plus the bound on this, that is again AB, so we have this overall AB, order of e to the minus delta square over 4 alpha. Okay, so this is the final bound. So you see that here we see very well our trade-off between all our parameters. If alpha is too large, if alpha is very large, this is very small, but this becomes not small at all. So we need to solve for all these parameters in a way that everything is small. So how do we do that? Well, we first of all ask for all these exponents to be the same. Okay? So under which condition 1 minus vc times mu d is equal to alpha c squared d squared, and it is equal to delta squared over 4 alpha. Okay, so we have these two equations. But then we ask a third equation, because we want this common exponent to be something that decays in the right way. We want it to decay as x delta d, where this is the gap, this is the distance, and x contains the correlation length. In fact, it contains it in this way. Okay? Well, okay, so these equations can be solved. So this is trivial algebra. You just solve these equations. And the solution is alpha equal delta over d 1 over 4x, c equal 2x, and x is equal 1 over 2v plus delta over mu. So under this solution, then everything has the form of AB order of E to the minus X delta D, which is D over Xi. And being Xi just equal 1 over delta X, so we just need to invert this thing. So this gives us Xi equal to 2V over delta plus 1 over mu. Okay. So this is the final result. Now let's study. So the final result is, if we have a unique ground state and a gap delta, all correlation functions decay like e to the minus d, that is the distance between your operators, over Xi, where this Xi is given by this formula. V is the Lieb-Robinson speed. So the faster the correlations can travel, the larger is the correlation length. Delta is the denominator. So you see that in the case the system becomes gapless, then Xi would diverge, which is what we know. So that's why we need a finite gap. And then we have this other correction, 1 over mu. What is mu? Mu, remember the Lieb-Robinson bounds, plays the role of 1 over A. Remember, in front of everything in the Lieb-Robinson bounds up there, we have mu. And when we derived it, mu was 1 over A. It was the lattice constant. So in the continuum limit, when A is very small, which means that mu is very large, this doesn't play any role. Right? So this really tells us, oh, the correlation length is this. On the other hand, if mu is very small, which means A is very large, so this means, oh, I'm not looking things at a large distance when A looks small. I'm looking at the interactions, the correlation functions for points that are very close to each other. Well, then you don't have exponential decay at very short distances. Exponential decay is something that happens after some distance that depends on your, or, you know, on your lattice constant. So it's fine, right? We want to look these things at large distances. So at large distances, this is large, this is small, and this is the result. So you see, what is the role that the gap plays? And now let me conclude with my remark about the uniqueness of the ground state. If you had a degenerate ground state, but the operators A and B between 0 label alpha and 0 label beta, if this tunneling was 0, or which is the same, because this is just a rotation, the expectation value of AB in the ground state with alpha is the same than the expectation value in beta, then you will not, even if you have a degeneracy, the proof still works. Because basically you cannot distinguish this correlation function from this correlation function. So everything goes through and we have an overall factor of 2 that doesn't change anything. But in symmetry breaking, that's the essence of symmetry breaking, This is different from this. Magnetization in one ground state is different from magnetization in another state. So the way out for having a degenerate ground state that still decays, are still exponentially decaying correlation functions, if you have a gap above it, is that, oh yes, I have a degeneracy, but these different ground states cannot be distinguished by a local operator, by an order parameter, by something local, which is the sign of symmetry breaking, right? You look at a local object that breaks the symmetry, and you see what expectation value it takes in the two ground states. So it is possible, but you would need to devise a system that has degenerate ground states, and these degenerate ground states are not distinguished by local observation. So their difference must be topological. And this is what we're going to see tomorrow, what is topological order. So for us, this is what topological order is. A degenerate ground state, where the different degenerate ground states that are orthogonal, but are not distinguished by any local operator. So this is what we learn from this proof. OK, thank you.